And hopefully by the time I finish talking today, you'll understand why this is a big deal, why it's significant, and what this URL is really good for. But in order to get the context for this, let me run the clock back just a little bit to the beginning of this relationship. Around the end of 1994, the main Debian site was this machine called ftp.debian.org. It was a PC under some student's desk at a university, I think somewhere in Michigan, though I never can remember. And there were problems with that arrangement, as you might imagine. Anytime we made a non-trivial update and lots of people wanted to grab updated copies of bits, that particular university's T1, which was their only connection to the rest of the world, got pretty saturated. And you know, the network folks would come around to try and figure out what was going on, and the second or third time it was the same guy's machine under the same desk. He started to take, you know, some grief over this, and there were all sorts of questions about whether this was an appropriate use of university resources and all that sort of thing. At that time, Bruce Perens was one of the three people sort of in the center of the Debian project, along with Ian Murdoch and Ian Jackson. And he was very concerned about the stability of the situation. He knew that I was managing a group of people that maintained a lot of computing and network resources at HP, and he just sort of, out of the blue, asked me one day, since I was a new member of this thing we called the Debian community, if there was some way I could grab a copy of the bits and put them on a machine somewhere, you know, just in case something happened. So I scrounged a cast-off Vectra, HP Vectra 486, 33 megahertz power system with two really big disk drives, a 300 meg system disk and a 660 meg disk for the archive. And yes, meg. You know, 5 1/4 flow height, SCSI drives, really fast, but only had 10 megabit networking, so it didn't matter. Five and a quarter, full height. And I just had to throw in, it was an Adaptec 1740 ESA controller. If you ever had to deal with one of those, you know, we should like have a support group at a pub somewhere where, and I put Debian on it. And that was actually a novel idea, because every machine that Debian had ever had bits on before was actually running something else. In fact, the machine under the desk in the university was, to the best of my knowledge, running Sonos something or other, but I'm not sure about that. And so once that machine sort of got put in place, master.debian.org, this idea of a machine where the archive would be constructed by the developers who were involved, but would not actually be the machine that all the end users went to, that we would have an explicit layer of mirrors that we pointed all of the public access to so that that central machine didn't get waxed quite so hard when there were things being changed, was born. And because I had permission to do so, and it was my job, and I was paying for the bandwidth and all of that, this machine was donated by and hosted by HP in a Colorado Springs Test and Measurement Division data center for a couple of years, until the auditors came along and wondered what that was all about. And we discovered that, you know, there were other people who'd be willing to provide that resource. But that's how far back the relationship, intentional or otherwise, between HP and Debian goes. I actually find it highly amusing, and I'm sure many of you will too, that given the state of the current relationship between HP and Debian, my management chain loves to, you know, talk about how smart this all was of the company and so forth. And of course, at the time, it wasn't quite under a student's desk, but it was certainly in the middle of a, well, never mind, you get the idea. So we fast forward in time a little bit to sort of the mid-1990s, and it actually had gotten fairly embarrassing for lots of us who work inside of HP that PA RISC was, you know, the only major 32-bit CPU family that wasn't running Linux. And various folks, including Matthew Wilcox here, who were up in Canada and Ottawa in particular and various other places, had this little organization called the Puffin Group, a bunch of consultants who were trying to make a name for themselves, and they announced that they were going to do the Linux port to the PA RISC architecture. And, you know, it was a very interesting period of time, because there were a lot of folks inside HP that went, hey, that's a really great idea, but we can't work on that. And fortunately, by the spring of 1999, the relevant folks in HP's management chain had decided that this was a sufficiently worthwhile endeavor to be worth officially supporting, and all of a sudden it opened the floodgates a little bit. Lots of people inside HP who had lots of experience working with Unix systems and were very interested in Linux, all of a sudden, I think, felt sort of, you know, enfranchised, or whatever the right word is, empowered, to go do some things and participate in this process and take some of the knowledge they had accumulated and contribute it towards this Linux thing. And in particular, after LinuxCare acquired the Puffin Group, and this wasn't just a fun project anymore, the company had to make some conscious decisions about how much it wanted to continue and how much resource it was going to put in and so forth. And the bottom line of all of this is that HP realized that this work on porting the kernel and providing toolchain support and so forth wasn't going to be useful unless there was a complete Linux distribution that people could install and use. You know, why is it that Debian ended up being the distribution that was selected for that work? Well, you know, as I said, a port was sort of irrelevant without an installable distribution, but the public message had already gone out that the Itanium processor family was going to replace the PA RISC architecture in HP's long-term plans. So if you're, you know, a fledgling small commercial distribution company doing Linux, you know, little companies like Red Hat and Novell, Novell SUSE now, it's just SUSE back then, and many of the others, Turbo Linux and so forth, none of those guys were interested in doing anything for PA RISC because they said, well, you know, it's an architecture that you've already kind of let the cat out of the bag, isn't going to be around forever. So it's never going to have a really huge customer base. So why would we sink a lot of engineering effort into this and probably not ever be able to get any money back out of it? If you want us to do it, give us the big bucks. And, you know, we have the expertise, we can certainly do the work, but UHP will get to pay for it. The problem is that HP didn't actually see a commercial need for this either. It was just one of those things where here's an opportunity for the company to get involved in and learn how this whole open source thing really works. And it's a little embarrassing that you have a nice, really nice 32-bit RISC architecture that doesn't have good Linux support. But, you know, it's not worth huge piles of cash. And so along comes Debian. Various people within HP knew about Debian. They contacted me. We had, by this time, the company split had happened, and I was on the Agilent side of that split. We had some conversations. In the end, HP ended up deciding to work very much in a community kind of mode to get Debian ported for the PA RISC, and then later the Itanium and other relevant processor architectures that HP cares about. One of the reasons I'm spending so much time talking about this is that that project really established some of the sort of habits or behaviors that the company has gone on to continue to exhibit since then. There was this notion that we didn't want this to be some kind of a fork. We wanted this to be a real port of Debian. All the work was going to be done in the community's view. We were going to go out and use the normal project resources. We weren't going to do this on some separate server and make it available through separate distribution channels. And as a consequence of that, we were very, very interested in merging all of the changes that we made upstream as far and as fast as possible so that they'd be well integrated with everything else going on in the distribution and we wouldn't have to maintain this, you know, sort of odd forked branch for a long time. As part of that, the company actually hired some existing Debian developers, including me. They encouraged some existing HP engineers to go become more involved in the Debian project. And in fact, there's probably at least one person in the room here today who was an HP employee at that time period who got encouraged to go figure this Debian thing out and become part of that community. And frankly, you know, that whole project went really well. And the Debian port for PA RISC works well. People use it. It's never been officially supported by the company as a commercial offering, but there have been a lot of folks that have ended up using that and contributing to it over time. And the most important part of it is that it helped the company figure out how to do this stuff, and it has really colored the experiences that we've had working on lots of other stuff since. When I said that it sort of set a set of behaviors, this is a slide straight out of one of our marketing decks that gets used in front of customers all the time. You notice the amount of similarity between the things that we thought were important. By the way, this slide was pulled straight out of a talk that I gave at the first Debian mini conference here at LCA, though actually in Brisbane. I've had the pleasure of being part of all of the Debian mini conferences at LCA since the first one, which was the first ever LCA mini conf. But if you notice, there's a striking similarity here because our fundamental behavioral principles still include this idea of participating directly in open source development communities. We don't work with communities. We are part of these communities. We engage directly. We try to do all of our unique and interesting development work in a way that allows it to go upstream as fast and as far as possible. It also means that, you know, we've made a real emphasis on using existing open source licenses. We historically have been one of the largest, if not the largest, distributors of GPL V2 software anywhere on the planet. Therefore, not surprisingly, we've had a very active role in this whole GPL V3 process. We're expecting another draft of that this week, by the way, so we're getting very close to the end of the GPL V3 process. I still have no idea what the final draft is really going to look like or whether in the end of the day I'm going to go or. But, you know, we'll see. We've certainly taken the opportunity, and I hope all of you have, to provide our input into that process, and we're certainly hoping things come out well in the end. But, you know, somewhere along the line, we ended up in this mode where it's like, okay, we have some experience working with Debian. We know how to do this. Where would we actually use it as a company? Why would it ever make sense to work with a non-commercial distribution instead of commercial distribution partners? And what we learned over time from a lot of very successful engagements with our commercial distribution partners is that they have things they're focused on too. And sometimes the business interests that we have as a company and things that our customers are willing to pay us for don't align very well with the directions that the commercial distributions are taking at any given time. And so there's an opportunity sometimes for us to provide a time-to-market advantage for HP and HP's customers by delivering functionality which is not yet available from the commercial distributors. When I talk about time-to-market, it has to do with the fact that we have requirements coming in from our customers that lead us to hardware developments that are released asynchronously with the release schedules for commercial distributions. Sometimes it's a short window where we have hardware available that they don't have software for. Sometimes they actually, you know, get our requirements in early enough that the releases line up right. But there have been a number of times over the years where there was something that was really important to the company to get done, and it was a heck of a lot easier to go get that thing done in the Debian community, demonstrate the capability, you know, deliver a lightly forked variant of Debian, usually just a custom kernel, maybe an additional utility or two as an extra.deb, which we then were able to turn around sometime later and work with our commercial distribution partners to have them pick up the same functionality and have it become part of their standard certified distributions going further. But at the end of the day, what's happened is that participating in the Debian project has become one of the primary channels through which HP interacts with open source projects other than the sort of big two or three that, you know, you obviously want to have direct engagements with, like the kernel.org community. And it's ended up, as a result, being something that we look to and lean towards every time we have some business problem we're trying to solve where it seems like the right place to go acquire interesting technology. And there have been some interesting results. This, again, is a slide that some of you have seen before because most of these things aren't terribly new except that last line down there about the number of embedded uses of Linux in the company now where technology's been grabbed from Debian. But this time-to-market thing, the first time that HP was able to break the SPECfp 2000 record with an Itanium 2 system, it was actually running Debian Linux before the commercial distributions had support for the chipset, the ZX1 chipset that HP did for that processor family. And that was pretty cool. You know, the fastest floating point processor in the world for some number of months was a machine in the database is having a Debian operating system on it. Let's fast forward a little bit. August 2006, last fall, Linux World, San Francisco. The thing that, I don't know, Michael Bay and lots of other people have beat me up for over the years. You guys use Debian a lot. You go do all these interesting vertically integrated specialized products with Debian, but you know, if I just buy some of your ProLiant servers, can I get support for Debian or not? And the answer had always been one of those things I had to waffle on a little bit. Go ahead and laugh. You can laugh at that one. In fact, I sort of, you know, put the brown paper bag on and hid in the corner. But all that's changed. It's changed in a really significant way. And next up, laptops. You guys are never satisfied. I started with the stuff that we think will actually make us money. And we'll go from that to doing things that, you know, make good sense for everybody. Why ProLiant? What's a big deal about the ProLiant server family? Well, this is another one of those. I just grabbed it out of a marketing deck slide. But, technology, man. The whole point there is that, the marketing people like to invent words. Okay. Well, there's at least one marketing guy in the room, but I won't point at him so that he can, Give me an off, never mind. The point is that for more than a decade, this particular brand of industry standard, i.e., you know, Intel x86 and related processor family servers, has been the number one selling server model in the world. It has generated an immense amount of revenue for HP. It's an immense number of units. Yes, the current run rate is substantially in excess of 1 million units a year. Substantially in excess. And right now, today, we think that something more than 25% of those end up running Linux. Those are fairly substantial numbers. It's really hard to get to absolutes because, of course, a lot of folks that are running Linux don't buy it. They certainly don't buy it from us. But the way our ordering systems are set up, we do have a lot of hints about what OS is likely to be run as the first principal OS on a system. So we're fairly confident in those numbers. And there's all sorts of things that have caused that to be true, independent of the relationship with Debian. And this is another one of those slides from the marketing guy's deck. But, you know, frankly, this stuff is real. And if you're running servers in data center kinds of environments, and particularly if you need to remotely administer them, I honestly, you know, all corporate affiliation aside, I think they're really cool boxes. And I bought one for myself that's running in my house because I like it. So now, what about the Debian stuff? Well, we announced in August 2006 at Linux World the intention to, you know, provide official support for Debian on our ProLiant family. But as usual, there's all sorts of, well, what does that exactly mean? Well, there's two things that we realized. One is that there are a set of things that are important for us to do to make sure that people can effectively integrate ProLiant servers in environments that are already out there that are mostly Debian oriented. And you can see some of the things on the left here. One of the problems is, of course, that, you know, when you go to actually try and test and certify hardware, you run into that. You'd really like to be using a stable release, but you also need kernels that have device drivers that support your recent hardware. So one of the things that we've done temporarily is we've built a custom version of the Sarge installer that has some fresher drivers in it. We're only supporting 2.6 kernels, not 2.4. You know, all sorts of decisions like that that I think folks would agree generally make pretty good sense. But there's also this issue that there are customers, particularly who are interested in some of the value-added commercial environment management tools that we have out there that probably have heterogeneous environments. And so it's not just about making Debian run well if Debian's the only thing you're running, but also for certain classes of customers, making sure that we provide the right agents and other tools and hooks to make it possible to use these servers in heterogeneous environments with more of that value-added stuff. And in particular, one of the things that, particularly in the Blade server space, has been fairly exciting over the last couple of years was as a result of HP's acquisition of RLX Technologies and their control tower technology. There's actually a user interface now. It's not open source. I'm not trying to, you know, confuse anybody here about that. But there's a pretty cool user interface for doing management of cluster-oriented Blade server environments that not only is it on the path to having Debian be one of the things you can manage very well, but it is, it's in fact, itself using Debian bits and pieces in its guts these days. So it's kind of a cool story in both directions. But to sort of summarize what's going on here, it's a pretty broad set of servers that we've chosen to enable, everything except the cheapest of the little, you know, mini tower kinds of servers. The set of servers that are supported this moment is a fairly small subset of that, that they'll be adding to that matrix in phases as they go through our testing processes and become convinced that more of those machines are running well. Right now, it's the servers only, not external storage or some of the OpenView management integration. Turns out that's okay because almost everybody that buys ProLiant buys them with internal storage options. So, you know, that looks like a big qualifier, but it actually only affects a very small percentage of potential customers. And I'm supposed to make it very clear that what HP is providing is quote-unquote enablement on our ProLiant servers. And I'll explain what these words mean a little bit in a few moments, but there's actually a challenge that we in the Debian community pose to corporate entities like HP, because we don't actually have a certification suite that a company like HP can run, which Debian will then use to say, ah, yes, this is blessed, it works fine, and so forth. It's not clear to me that that's something that Debian really needs to do or wants to do or should care about, but it has certainly posed some procedural difficulties for the people inside HP who are accustomed to going, ah, yes, we'll certify, you know, Red Hat version such and such, give us the certification test suite, we'll run it and give you the answers. And so it's just kind of interesting. This is that sort of, you know, how do you match up the expectations and behaviors of a pure community project with the behaviors and expectations of people who think they know how this is supposed to work in a corporate environment. So what's available today? Well, if you go to that URL I started you with, there's a link you can follow that will get you to the current version of this table. You can see we're starting to talk about which servers are available, which components are available. That matrix should get nice and fleshed out over time, and there'll be a whole lot more lines because more models will be added. You can see we started, well, I don't know if you can actually read that or not. Did the video get better? Not really. If you could read that stuff on the left, you'd see that the models that are the most popular in the ProLiant family are where we started. The C-class Blade servers are coming fairly soon. That's something that lots of customers have expressed interest in. I also want to point out that in addition to making things available directly from HP's website, on the middle on the right, there is a HP ProLiant page in the Debian Wiki, which HP employees are contributing to and participating in. So if you have information that you'd like to add about things you've discovered that work or don't work, issues that we ought to address and so forth, that's a great place to go. There's also an email address that you'll find from the Go Debian site if you want to communicate with HP's folks that are doing Debian support. They'd be more than happy to hear from you. They'd love to hear the, gee, you know, I discovered this problem, if you fix it, we'll buy another 6,000 servers, but, you know, they'll probably answer regardless. And so the final sort of piece in this whole set of things that we're committed to last August, in addition to some, you know, making some .devs available as agents and system health applications and so forth, as of December 1st, 2006, you can buy real honest-to-God support care packs from HP to run Debian on ProLiant servers and have, you know, full OS-level support for that. I don't know whether anybody has actually taken this up on that or yet or not, though I know there are an awful lot of bids floating around out there that include some of these line items in them. All of you that have been asking me over the years, gee, when am I going to be able to buy support from HP for Debian? December 1st, 2006, i.e. right now today. If you want it, go buy it, please. Help convince the company that this wasn't a bad idea. And let all your friends know, if there are places that this would allow you to go in and use Debian in data center environment or something where you previously wouldn't have been able to, go for it. This does not in any way, shape, or form reflect any, you know, reduction in the level of support that HP is providing for our commercial distribution alternatives. It's an adder. It's something new and different we've added to the set of things we offer. But I hope that at least some of you will find some reasons to be excited about this and to go buy more cool hardware from us as a result. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention a few of the other things we do that are really cool based on Debian. One of them is this thing called the HP Telco extensions. Martin Michelmeyer actually helped me think through what the right way to name things were. And, you know, it's the classic, how do you sort of build the right level of connection with Debian and yet not make it sound like you're the only ones doing something that's pure Debian. So the official name of the product is, I think, HP, it's Debian GNU Linux with HP Telco extensions or something like that. But at the end of the day, we all call it TE. And what this is really all about is that there are a set of communications suppliers, people like Motorola in particular, who build things which they then sell to other companies that use them to deploy things like mobile phone services. And so we have been building some vertically integrated solutions for them where we take a specially customized version of the RX2600 Itanium server redone in a shallower, slightly taller rack mount box to fit in telco racks. It can be bought with DC power supplies and, you know, relay closure interfaces for management systems and all those things the telco guys care about. But we ship it out with a sort of minimalized version of the Debian distribution with a highly customized kernel. Highly customized in that it is a full implementation of the OSDL carrier grade Linux specification plus a bunch of other bits and pieces that our customers and HP care about. It turns out a lot of the features that are in there are of interest and relevance to customers beyond telco, though, because we put in crash dump facilities, we put in other system performance analysis and related interfaces, and there's some protocol stack components that might have relevance beyond just the telco environment. But one of the things a lot of folks don't realize is this has driven a huge, this one piece of work has driven a huge slice of HP's Itanium Linux sales to date. And in fact, this piece of work has been such a business success for HP and for the customers we're selling it to, that I'm told that sometime this year, roughly 30% of all mobile phone calls in the world will touch a Debian HP Itanium system somewhere in that call's progress. That's kind of cool. I don't know exactly how you come up with those numbers. But when they told me that one, I kind of leaned back and went, wow, that's pretty cool. So I mentioned the differences in all these words. I'm not going to try and go through all this, but I just want to point out that as customers or as people working in the open source community, and in particular, if English is not your first language, it's very easy to find yourself using words like enablement, support, certification, in a very interchangeable kind of way. And frankly, you know, there's no problem with that, except that when you're talking to people from a company like HP, they have to figure out what those words mean. Because if we say we're going to support something, there's a set of explicit commitments that go along with that. So I just wanted to point out that this thing I mentioned before, sort of that middle bullet, because Debian doesn't offer a official process for certifying its distribution, the attitude that HP's hardware divisions have taken is that means we can't certify Debian because there's no well-defined thing to do that would cause it to be certified. So what we've done instead is to enable Debian, careful choice of words there, by making what we think is a commercially feasible effort to test Debian on real systems in a phased approach. So what does all that mean? Well, I don't know what the big deal is personally, because we have always stress tested the systems that we're shipping far beyond the requirements set by our commercial distribution partners. In fact, our stress tests are so tough on systems that we are frequently the people discovering problems and reporting them and their bugs back to the distributors. This is not surprising. If you're a Linux distribution company, you've got really smart people, but you don't necessarily have a big testing lab with really big, you know, really well-outfitted systems. It's not surprising that first-tier hardware vendors like HP and some of our competitors would be in a position to find and expose problems that, you know, a Red Hat or SUSE or someone like that wouldn't have the resources to do. But the consequence of this is that we actually believe that the stress testing we do, which is the same kind of stress testing we're applying in the certification and enablement and release testing processes around the Debian stuff we're doing, we actually believe they are at least as strenuous and as the results we're getting are at least as robust as anything any of the commercial distribution vendors have ever asked us to do. And as I mentioned, as of the beginning of December, we are officially offering product support offerings for Debian being run by HP customers on our systems. So I'm going to skip right by this. I hope that if you think you have some reason to go buy some industry standard rackable servers or blade systems, that you'll think about buying them from HP and that the support we're providing to Debian will be part of that equation. But at the end, what I really want you to remember is that URL. Anytime you want, right now, if wireless is working for you, it wasn't for me the last time I looked, you can go to that URL and click down and see which servers are being supported. Some of the other things that are going to be coming, there is now one set of thin clients that are available and shipping with full Debian enablement and support. There will be other products coming along there before long. So, at this point, any questions? You have one.
That matrix with HP servers, which has various different HP software supported on Debian, it doesn't have checkbox for this server works. seen without management software
to go to. Well, I'm sorry, that I can go back and poke the guys about how that's phrased, but the implication is any machine that's in the matrix that you get to from the Go Debian works just fine with. Okay, there is a gap until Etch is released. Once Etch is released and we switch over our testing processes from Sarge with our tweaked up installer and kernel to real Etch. By the way, all the drivers and stuff you need for all of the ProLiance are in Etch, works just fine. You won't see that officially listed as tested until Etch is released and we have a fixed thing we can point to and say that's what we tested. But if like me, you're inclined to run Etch today instead of Sarge anyway, I think you'll be happy with the results. Any other questions? We can take that offline. We have lots of ways to respond to tenders that are specifying Red Hat. In fact, there's probably at least one person in the room from the Australian HP field who would love to touch base with you and work very specifically on how to follow up with that if you'd like. Oh, very good. So out of curiosity, would everybody who works for HP in the room, like, you know, raise your hands or something, identify yourself? So there are just a few of us here this year. Ooh. Yeah, they'll all beat me up for what I didn't say later. I do want to point out that, you know, for a variety of reasons, there are more HP folks at this year's LCA than at any time in the past. The last number I heard was 30-some shown as being registered with an HP affiliation, and at least a couple of folks that didn't list a company affiliation. So I fear that there's a higher percentage of HP employees here than women, but we certainly tried to work on that stat too. Okay, other questions? Oh, yeah, sure.
My question is, in the past I've noticed some hardware vendors have, for example, offered Linux systems or systems with Linux pre-installed, then you'd find out that the sticker price to get something with Linux instead of Windows was actually higher. I'm curious now that HP is offering support, how those the support for Debian prices compare with, say, support for Windows or commercial distros.
I believe that, I don't actually know. Maybe one of the folks in the room that's from the services part of the company could help us with that. I believe that the prices we're offering for support of Debian are competitive with our other Linux offerings. I have no idea how that compares with the prices we charge for similar care packs on Windows or anything. I just don't know. Those are not numbers I ever look at.
Does anybody know?
Well, yeah, so we're not actually charging for anything that's required to make it work. That's not part of the equation. The question is, if someone wants to buy the support care packs that HP Services is offering, are those priced competitively with the other Linux distros and the other OSs? And I don't know the answer. That's an interesting question, though. We can certainly find that out and get back to you if you'd like it.
Yeah.
Sure, okay. And in fact, I don't think there's any direct pricing information on the web. I think you get to the point where you have the part numbers for the support things, and then you need to, because of the pricing variations in different geographies, you then need to talk to somebody in your region to get that converted into real pricing info. There are lots of things about the way you can and can't order various things from our website that I hope will get better over time, but being a truly international company has its challenges sometimes. Any last questions? Well, thank you very much for your time and attention. I hope that this stuff is useful and interesting to you, and I guess it's lunchtime?
Yes, it is. Just a quick note to let you know, we'll be back at 2 p.m. with Keith, who will be talking on stuff, right? So we'll see you back at 2, and thanks for coming, and thanks Vidal for that talk.